Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, Text 19. Dharma uvacha, kachit bhadre nayam atmanaste, vichayasi malayate shanmukhena, alakshaye bhavanti antardhim. Dure bandhum sochasi kananda ba. Dharmu vacha. Kachit bhadre nayan atmanaste. Vichayasi malayate shan mukhena. Alakshaye bhavantim anantaradhim. Dubhandam sochasi kananam ba. Dharma vacha. Dharma inquired. Gachit. Whether. Bhadre. Mad. Madam. Anamayam. Quite hale and hearty. Atmana. Self. Te. Unto. Malayata. Which darkness? Oh, sorry, I misunderstood. Vichaye asi. Appear to be covered with the shadow of grief. Malayata, which darkens, Isat, slightly, Mukhena, by the face, Alakshaye, you look, Bhavatim, unto yourself, Antaradhim, some disease within. Dure, long distance. Bandham, friend. Sochasi, thinking of. Kanchana, someone. Amba, another. Translation. Dharma, in the form of a bull, asked, "Madam, are you not hale and hearty? Why are you covered with the shadow of grief? It appears by your face that you have become black. You are suffering from some internal disease, or are you thinking of some relative who is away in a distant place?" Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The people of the world in the age of Kali are always full of anxieties. Everyone is diseased with some kind of ailment. From the very faces of the people of this age, one can find out the index of the mind. Everyone feels the absence of his relative who is away from home. The particular symptom of the age of Kali is that no family is now blessed to live together. To earn a livelihood, a father lives at a place far away from the son, or the wife lives far away from the husband, and so on. There are sufferings from internal diseases, separations from those near and dear, and anxieties for maintaining the status quo. These are but some of the important factors which make the people of this age always unhappy. Om Ajnana Timiranda Shyaganandjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militamena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shrimati Hridaya Nanda Goswami Niti Namine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Vicharini Nebhisesi Shunivari Pashya Chade Sitarine. Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. this world is full of anxiety. People are always happy. We were just talking about that this morning. I told you it's in the purport. So many people have to travel so far to earn a livelihood, especially you see it here in the devotee community. There are many, many gentlemen that are here that have left their wives in India and are making some income here. This is the age of Kali. So many people even that are living here have to travel to other states to earn a living so they can provide an income for their family. So this is the age of Kali. But within the age of Kali we have a great opportunity also, as you all know. There is great benediction to living in the age of Kali because we're benedicted by great souls that also help us to realise that actually this material world is not a pleasant place to be. So today we honour the disappearance day of Purushottama Das Thakur, as well as the appearance day of His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So today I just wanted to read a little bit about their pastimes and make some comments about that as well. The first one would be Purushottama Das Thakur, whose appearance day it is today. And although there's not that much information available about Purushottama Das Thakur, he was, from all intent and purposes, he was a great devotee of Lord Balaram, and he was one of the Lord's intimate friends, the Sakas, in the Balaram and Krishna Leela. He came again in Kali Yuga to accompany Lord Nityananda in the Gaura, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, preaching the glories of Nama Sankirtan in this most degraded age of Kali. So he came to actually help people realize their real purpose. Their main purpose of life is to go back home, back to Godhead, to become Krishna conscious. The main purpose of these great souls is to disturb the minds of people that are caught in this trap of material illusion, that are trapped in this unfortunate age of Kali. Waking them up. Jeev Jago. Come on, wake up. This is not your real reality. This is not your real home. So some of the things that were said about Purushottam Das Thakur, the 23rd and 24th prominent devotee of Lord Nityananda Prabhu was Sadaseva Kaviraj and his son Purushottam Das. So he was the son of Sadashiva Kaviraj, who was the 10th Gopa. Since birth, Purushottam Das was immersed in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, and he always engaged in childish play with Lord Krishna. This is by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Another point from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Sadashiva Kaviraj was greatly fortunate. His son was named Sri Purushottam Das. Purushottama Thakur had no concern for his external body. Sri Nityananda Prabhu always resided within the core of his heart. Another quote from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sadashiva Kaviraj was a great personality. Purushottam Das was his son. From birth, Purushottam Das was absorbed in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and he always engaged in childish play with Lord Krishna. His son was named Sri Kanu Thakur, a very respectable gentleman. His body was saturated with the nectar of love for Krishna. So then it goes on to say there's a whole lineage. So it was in the family business. You had Sadashiva, his son became a great devotee of Lord Nityananda, and then his son, and so on and so forth. So we have to train our sons and daughters to also carry on this great tradition. Sri Purushottam Das Thakur had three principal disciples. They were Sri Mahadva Acharya, Sri Yadadva Acharya, and Devakinandana Das. They were from the Brahmana families. Sri Mahava Acharya later became the husband of Nityananda Prabhu's daughter, Ganga Devi. Sri Devakinandana Das was the author of an important book glorifying the lives of the different Vaishnavas. Purushottam Das Thakur's wife was named Janava, and she passed away after giving birth to Purushottam's son Kanu. Hearing the news, Nityananda Prabhu went to the house of Purushottama Das and took his son Kanu with him to his own village of Kadadana. Srila Prabhupada says that Sadashiva Kaviraj and Nagara Purushottam, who were father and son, are described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as Mahabhagavat, greatly fortunate, and they belong to the Vaidya caste of physicians. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that Purushottam thus lived in Sukhagra, midway between Chandaka and Sumurli railway stations. The deities installed were formerly served in Beladanga village, but when the temple fell into the river, the deities were taken to Sukhagra, and that temple was also swallowed by the Ganges, and so the deities were brought with Janava Mata's deities to Sahebanga, Berry Ground. Since that place was also destroyed, all the deities were again moved in about 3 or 4 miles to the village known as Chandragram, on the banks of the Ganges, 1 mile up from Palpara. I worship Sadashiva Kaviraj. This is from Purushottam Das Thakur's own writing. I worship Sadashiva Kaviraj with great attentiveness. He was constantly intoxicated with love and had no external consciousness. I bow down to my most worshipful Lord, Purushottam Thakur, who can list his incomparable qualities. He was merciful to those who were devoid of virtue, displaying the natural power of his compassion. When only 7 years old, he was so intoxicated with love for Krishna that he danced in a way that enchanted the entire world. Some people say that Purushottam's surname was Naga, while others say that his name Naga came from the name of the area where he lived. Since the five villages are so close together, these areas are sometimes called Nagardesh. Purushottam once ate snake poison when in a trance state without experiencing any ill effects. This was a source of great astonishment to all who witnessed it, and many of Nityananda Prabhu's associates often displayed such miraculous power. I don't know what he was doing drinking snake poison. Anyway, so Purushottam Das Thakur's disappearance day is today. As it was mentioned, he was a great devotee of Lord Balaram initially, and then a great devotee of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. And he relieved the suffering, just as all the great acharyas do. He relieved the suffering of the fallen conditioned souls who were suffering due to the advent of Kali Yuga. And people in this Kali Yuga are never really happy. And it was interesting that I was mentioning this whole point of happiness. People are sometimes thinking, if only I had this particular quality, or if I only have this, I'll be happy in this material world. But actually, it's very hard to find any sort of happiness in this material world. Whatever happiness is there is only a fleeting thing. Recently in my chaplaincy, I was discussing with a cancer patient, and how life was so rosy before he had this cancer. But then cancer set in, and then so many different things were afflicting him, and he was just in so much pain and suffering and so unhappy. One of the things that we talked about was, he was mentioning how, due to this unfortunate illness that he was suffering, as it was pointed out in the purport, his daughter was also very much aggrieved by the suffering of her father, to the extent where she was also getting migraines and suffering. Now, this girl had been suffering for a long time for the fact that she was beautiful. Now, this is really amazing. Sometimes we think, you know, if only I was beautiful, if only I was handsome, you know, and we envy other people that have beauty. But this girl, actually, for the whole of her life, was suffering because of her beauty. And I said, how is that? I mean, she's beautiful, you know, because I asked, why is she suffering from these headaches? Because, you know, I mean, she has the world at her feet, you know, she could be a model, she is, actually, when you see her, she is amazingly gorgeous, physically. And also, as temperament, she's also a very beautiful person. But this beauty has caused her no end of stress for the whole of her life. Because it was very hard for her to make friends, because people wouldn't feel comfortable with her because she was so beautiful. Because they saw their own inadequacies and they saw her and they thought, boy, I can never compare to her, so I don't want to be her friend, you know. The other thing was is that they were very envious of her. You know, look at how beautiful she is, and I'm left with this body, you know, like this. and they would never invite her to any parties or outings or anything, because they all feared that their boyfriends would be stolen by her because she was so beautiful. So she was really lonely, and she wished, she prayed actually, that she wouldn't be beautiful. So you can't have it anyway, you know. So even a person has wealth or beauty or whatever, still there's unhappiness, and that's the nature of this material world. No one is pleased with themselves. No one is absolutely satisfied with themselves in this material world. There is so much stress. We have to go to work, and sometimes we have to work in far-off places just to look after our family, and so many things. And yes, there are illnesses, internal diseases, separation from near and far. There are all these sad situations in the world today. But people are always trying to alter their material situation to make themselves feel better. Hence, at the present stage, we have operations that you can make physical changes to yourself, liposuction, Botox, all these different things are now commonplace. You go down the street and someone will say, get rid of your wrinkles fast, get a Botox injection, you know, because people look in the mirror and they see crow's nests, little crow's feet coming, crow's feet, crow's nests. My God, you'd be really scrimpled up. Crow's feet at the corner of your eyes, you know, and people are, oh, I've got to get rid of that. I don't look young anymore. Quick, a Botox injection, smooth it off and get rid of this and get rid of that. Dye my hair and do this and do that, and hair transplants and so many things. We can alter our body in so many ways, augment different things. So people are never happy. And then even on a mental level, you know, people are not happy about their mental situation, their physical situation. And so they go to life coaches, and people will advise them, do this for me, you know, do that, and so on and so forth. So this material world is full of anxieties. And with this comes the great compassion, like Purushottam Das Thakur, to show compassion to the fallen conditioned souls. These are self-realized individuals that want to help the living entity to wake up to the real reality. Wake up, sleeping souls. You're asleep. You're in an illusory reality. This is not the real. And hence we have the great appearance of personalities like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj coming to this earth. And today is his appearance day. These are great days. We had a really interesting thing this morning. Bhakti and I were talking, oh, it's the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta. It's a half day fast. You know, as ISKCON continues on and grows and grows and grows, and all these great souls, you know, we notice also that tomorrow Krishna Maharaj's disappearance is coming up, and the appearance day of so many other different acharyas, and the present day acharyas, there's hundreds, they're all half day fast, full day fast, and so on and so forth. Pretty soon, by the end of Kali Yuga, we won't be eating. It'll all be fasting and feasting. You know, because there are such great personalities, either appearance days, disappearance days, or whatever, of some Maharaj, or some Mataji, who's a great soul. So today is the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and I wanted to just read a few things out about his appearance day. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, great soul, great personality. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born on the 6th of February, 1874. And was a preacher of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition throughout India in the late 19th century and early 20th century. He was born as Bimala Prasad Datta in the seaside village known town of Jagannath Puri, Orissa in India. His father was the Vaishnava scholar Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the first to present the teachings of Chaitanya Vaishnavism to the English world. So he had, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his house, this is how. His neighbour was Lord Jagannath. His house was right next door to the temple, or practically right next door to the temple. So Lord Jagannath has 16 shaktis, consorts, or energies, represented by the 16 wheels of Lord Jagannath's cart in Puri. In Puri, the Lord's cart has 16 wheels, and they represent the 16 shaktis, or consorts. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, at this stage of the birth, or at the time that he was wanting another son, he had many children already. But he really prayed that he wanted a special son. So he went to Jagannath Temple, and there is some temples for the different shaktis, the different consorts of Lord Jagannath. And there's one which is Bimala Devi's temple. So for those of you that have the opportunity to go to Jagannath Temple, inside the compound there is a temple for Bimala Devi. Bimala Devi was one of the consorts for Lord Lord Jagannath, Lord Krishna. And so he went to Bimala Devi's temple to pray for a son, because Bimala Devi is very compassionate, very loving, and so he wanted a son that would be not just an ordinary son. He actually wanted a ray of Vishnu. He wanted his son to actually be part of that inner circle of Krishna's associates, to come to benedict this world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw the vision of Krishna consciousness overtaking the world, and he also saw his own limitations. He was getting older, and he saw that he couldn't manifest the power to actually spread this Krishna consciousness all over the world. So this is the reason why he went to the Jagannath temple, in particular to Bimala Devi's temple, and prayed at her lotus feet, "Please, you give me a son. Let my wife produce a son who will be able to execute the mission of Lord Chaitanya." That mission of Lord Chaitanya is that Krishna consciousness, the holy name of the Lord, is spread to every town and village. And so he personally knew that he couldn't do this anymore. And so he petitioned Bimala Devi to please do this. And so Bimala Devi fulfilled Bhaktivinoda Thakur's desire. She petitioned Lord Vishnu, Krishna, Jagannath, and Jagannath and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wife had a baby, and that baby was then called Bimala Prasad, the mercy of Bimala Devi. So he was an amazing youth. Even from his early years, he was an amazing youth. He was a genius, in fact, absolute genius. He learned all the scriptures, relished Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books, all his bhajans, everything. He memorized them, loved them, really took it to heart. In 1918, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati accepted the renounced order of spiritual life, assuming the title of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, for the purpose of propagating Krishna Bhakti throughout India. He organized the Gaudiya Math with 64 branches throughout the country. The headquarters of his mission, the Chaitanya Gaudiya Math, was located in Sridhar Mayapur, the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. So Maharaj wasn't just satisfied being an ordinary preacher, he wanted to be a sannyasi. So he got that inspiration from his Guru Maharaj, which is later explained, to actually be a sannyasi. Much the same as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's more potency when you actually have that ability to preach on the level of sannyas. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is also the spiritual master of the world-renowned A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai,
who at the age of 69 came to America to fulfill the desire of his guru, the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, and within a short span of 12 years established 108 centers around the world. So this was, again, the continuation. And made Hare Krishna a household word term throughout the world, translating texts into English and all other different languages, and gave purports to various Sanskrit Vedic texts such as Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and so many other different books, allowing thousands of suffering living entities. Thousands. Now, actually, millions. Now we're into the millions of fallen conditioned souls in this Kali Yuga to benefit from the learning of these valuable Vedic texts. At the age of only 7, Bimala Prasad Datta had memorized all 700 verses of the Bhagavad Gita and could explain each and every one. He learned every single verse of the Bhagavad Gita and could explain each and every one at 7. How are we going? It's amazing, such a personality. One day, the boy took an unoffered mango from the room of the family deity and ate it. His father chastised him for it and catching him and told him that it's not proper for a Vaishnava behaviour to eat food that had not first been offered to the Lord. At that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, taking his father's words very seriously, made a vow never to eat a mango again. That's amazing. Throughout his whole life, he kept his vow very faithfully. Whenever someone would offer him a mango, he would say, "I cannot eat this. I am a great offender." So this is an amazing personality. Here we have Mataji. Here we have this personality just by this mistake that he made as a young boy, but still he was so firm in conviction. That's it. At the age of 10, he was initiated by his father. So his father gave him Hari Nam initiation into the Hari Krishna mantra and the Srinidhev mantra. Later on, he attended a special Sanskrit college where he became expert in Sanskrit grammar, Vedic Shastra, and different views on philosophy. Due to a lifelong celibacy, he had such a clear memory that even in his last days, he could reproduce word for word any passage of any book he had read 50 years back. That's amazing. And I mean, I've seen Bhaktivedanta's book collection. We went to the, what's it called, Bhaktivedanta Trust at Harisori Prabhu has set up in Calcutta, and all his books. Has anybody been to that centre? The Bhaktivedanta Research Centre. Bhaktivedanta Research Centre. Research Centre. If you ever get a chance to go to Calcutta and you go to that centre, you can stay there even. You can stay overnight there. They're just such nice devotees, and they are collecting all these ancient books all from all over India. People bequeath their books at the time of death. Their father may have old books. And there's even one book there, or they've got a copy of it, where Lord Chaitanya has actually written different sections in his handwriting, Lord Chaitanya's handwriting. So you can see this. So one of the features that they've got, they inherited, or they got most of Bhaktisiddhanta's books, they're his research books. So it's a wall probably about as big as this wall here and about as high, packed with books of all different scriptures, all different philosophies, theologies, everything. So he read all those books, and that even at the last part of his life, he could remember what book, what was in each book. This is the potency of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. At college, he read all the books in the library. This is another thing that's known in Bhaktisiddhanta. He read all the books in the school library and made private studies into higher mathematics, international history, philosophy, Vedic astronomy. He was such a powerful debater that no one would argue or stand up against his vast intelligence or scholarship. So nobody said, oh, I'm not debating. Thank you. You know. At the age of 23, he opened a school in Calcutta, which he called Savasra Chattopadhyay. Many prominent and scholarly Calcutta gentlemen were among his students. By the time he was 25 years old, Bimala Prasad had acquired an impressive reputation as a scholar of Sanskrit, mathematics and astronomy. In 1901, Bhaktivinoda Thakur requested his son to become initiated in the Gayatri Mantra and accept a spiritual master. The Thakur had one very beloved disciple, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Right there. A very renowned Vaishnava saint in Navadvipa. It was therefore he who the Thakur requested his son to take initiation from. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur then approached the Babaji for getting initiation, but Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who had no disciples, out of his infinite humbleness, refused to accept such a knowledgeable pundit as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when he himself could not even write his own name. So Gaurakishore Das Babaji was practically illiterate, but he was such a great devotee of the Lord, so powerful in love for Krishna. And yet, and here we have this other great scholar, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's wanting to take initiation from this great lover of Krishna. So disappointed, Saraswati Thakur went back to his father and related to him what had happened. But Thakur Bhaktivinoda sent him out again and again. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta came back with the same news. So this time the Thakur told his son, unless you take initiation from Gaurakishore Das Babaji, your life is useless and no longer may you enter this house. Now this is like, he's such a pure devotee, he's your guru, you go and convince him to be his disciple. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati then set off with great determination, and meeting Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji on a bridge along the road, told him that he would jump off the bridge and kill himself if the Babaji did not accept him as his disciple. He said to him, my father has told me that the human form of life is worthless without a spiritual master. So if you refuse to accept me as your disciple, I must kill myself. Upon hearing that and seeing the young man's sincerity of purpose, Babaji accepted him as his only disciple. So this is a determination. We don't have to do this if you want a disciple here at ISKCON. We make it freely available. You don't have to cross any bridges and say, I'll jump off. I'm going on the West Gate. I'm going on the West Gate if you don't give me a discipleship. Over that year, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati travelled with Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his pilgrimages to all the principal holy places in India. During this time, he compiled a Vaishnava encyclopedia named the Vaishnava Manusha. In 1900, he was staying in Puri, where he began to publicly preach the precepts of Srimad Bhagavatam. In 1904, Srila Saraswati Thakur travelled to East Bengal. In 1905, he travelled to the far southern provinces of India, lecturing, preaching, writing, debating, fully absorbed in the fire of propagating the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the south, he travelled to places such as Simachala, Madras, Tirupati, Kanchapur, and many other places of pilgrimage. His strong preaching gave him such a reputation that his very name would strike terror in the hearts of his philosophical opponents. Sringa Guru. He was known as Sringa Guru, Lion Guru. So he must have been pretty heavy duty, you know. His strong preaching gave him such a reputation that his very name would strike terror in the hearts of his philosophical opponents. The perverted and immoral so-called religious activities of different nonsense cults and sects were doomed forever in the presence of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he could see through all these different cults and groups in that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada always stressed the importance of publishing and distributing Vaishnava literatures as a means of educating the mass of ignorant humanity in order to facilitate the printing of books and journals. He established 4 printing presses. So here we have it again. This whole purport, the material world in this age of Kali is always full of anxieties, miseries, nothing. Here we have these great preachers wanting to outreach to people. Present this philosophy. Let them hear a little bit about Krishna consciousness and let them change their lives for the better. Let them experience real happiness. So in 1918, at the age of 44, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur accepted the title of Goswami Maharaj by taking the renounced order of life sannyas. On the same day, he established his first Vaishnava monastery, the Chaitanya Math at Sridhar Mayapur, which began his preaching headquarters. And it's still a wonderful area to go and visit his temple there. One time a very important gentleman approached Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada and said that your Gaudiya Math is so nice you should open up temples in all cities of the world. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj replied, my real business is to establish temples in everyone's heart. So another point about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that he preached very strongly against the caste system in India. He was really a pioneer in actually saying that this caste system is a nonsense. And Srila Prabhupada in teachings of Lord Chaitanya actually quotes, our Krishna consciousness movement is based on my Guru Maharaj's proposition that anyone can engage in the Harinam Sankirtan and become a Vaishnava. So this was such a unique thing that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj brought to the world, that he actually saw that everyone has the opportunity to love Krishna. The caste Brahmins, totally against the caste Brahmins, would teach that no one can become Brahminical unless they're born in a Brahmana family. And surprisingly, when you read different histories, even Lord Jesus Christ, there is some record apparently that he went to Jagannath Puri, and there's some writings in the Jagannath temple that he came there at one time on pilgrimage, and he also preached against the caste system to the extent where they were ready to kill him even in Puri, and he had to leave that time and then went back to Jerusalem, where later he also taught the same message, that we're all equal and able to love God. So another thing that they taught was, no one can become guru unless they're born in the Goswami family. That's the line that's linked to Lord Nityananda Prabhu, you know. So Bhaktisiddhanta didn't come from a Brahmana family, and therefore he was not qualified in their eyes to be a guru. And he was not a Nityananda Vamsa, or a caste Goswami. So he was still teaching. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj wrote a book on the subject called the Brahmani He Vaishnava, and quoted extensively from the Vedas, taking shelter of the Pancharatriki Vidhi, that anyone can become a Vaishnava. Anyone, simply anyone. And the Goswamis, the caste Goswamis, didn't like this at all. And they became very, very envious. What is this person teaching? You know, and that to the extent where they tried to kill him, they tried to assassinate him. On many occasions his life was in danger, because they were upset that he was teaching, that he was taking something away from their prestigious little position that they hold. So they were filled with envy. And this is again the nature of a powerful teacher, a powerful preacher. They disturb the minds of those that are captivated by material energy and linked to this material energy, and they cut through and just show them the truth. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was like that. And this point of envy is a really interesting thing, and it's mentioned so often. I recently saw a class by your Guru Maharaj, Radhanath Swami, where he was talking about envy. Envy is something that is so detrimental to our Krishna consciousness, and in particular, Maharaj was talking about envy that lays dormant within the heart of a devotee. And people should somehow or other, the devotees, as their main cleansing process, should eradicate any enviousness that we have in our system. Sometimes we may envy someone else in devotional service, and we should check that, because this envy actually stops us from progressing in our Krishna consciousness. And the analogy that Maharaj gave was Duryodhana was, for all intents and purposes, a really powerful personality. He was extremely handsome. People loved him. He managed the state very well. He had riches. He had everything. But he was envious of the Pandavas. And so all these good qualities that he had were for naught, burnt up because of his envy. So similarly, Maharaj was saying that you may have really good qualities as a devotee. You know, you may play mridanga very well, you may do different things very well as a devotee, you may even preach very well. But if you're envious of another devotee, then all those things are for naught, because you won't get love of God without envy. So the devotee is always envyless, and always humility and compassion giving to everyone. So we should be really careful about this point of envy. Sometimes, you know, you may have a situation, within Krishna consciousness we have relationships. We have our friends, we have our juniors, and we have our seniors. And this is a system within Krishna consciousness that should be very much adhered to. Prabhupada was insistent on this, you know, that we, from our position, we remain very friendly to our peers, people that came to Krishna consciousness at about the same time as we did. We have to maintain a very solid friendship with those people, and reveal our minds to them, and associate with them. With younger people that come to Krishna consciousness, we have to be their teachers. We have to maintain a level of teaching with them. It's not that you can be friendly, but in the same token, there is always that distance. Keep a little bit of distance in that relationship, that the person that you're teaching always has a level of respect. And similarly, we in our position also have to have respect to our teachers and our senior devotees, and give them all praise. Sometimes, you know, you have people that say, oh, I wish I was the Sankirtan leader, or I wish I could do this, or I wish I could be the temple president, or I wish I could be a guru, or whatever. That's not a right consciousness. Right consciousness is to be no envy, and just really glorify each devotee in their position. Very, very important. So, Maharaj was such a great preacher. He disturbed the masses. He caused a disturbance, a fracas. That's the nature of a devotee. We're out there to cause a fracas, to cause a disturbance. Like we just had the Rath Yatra. We caused a disturbance. You know, people were amused, but yet their lives were changed because of it. And just while I'm talking on the point of Rath Yatra, this Rath Yatra we just recently had was one of the most successful ones out of all three of them. Financially also. And I, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank all of those devotees that were responsible in so many different ways of helping it be such a success. The Lakshmi that was provided by all of you made it possible for us to do the things we wanted to do. Your assistance in so many different areas was so appreciated. Everything went off without a hitch. Lord Chaitanya was really behind this whole Rath Yatra, and I thank you really from the bottom of my heart. It was such a joyous opportunity to work with you all. Next year, bigger and better. I've asked all the departmental managers, what can we do next year? How can we improve next year? This was pretty good, but what can we do next year? So I've got suggestions from all of you, and it's been really enthusing. Things like screen TVs and having a video of different things. We were talking about having a diorama in the book distribution area to capture people's attention, to cause a disturbance in their minds. You know? People couldn't believe that we were handing out free watermelon. My God, what is that? What a disturbance. Nobody gives any. There's no such thing as a free lunch, and you guys are giving away watermelon for free. People are like, oh yeah, I'll have a piece. Like, amazing, you know? That just doesn't happen in the world. So this is really a disturbance to people's minds. This is what devotees do. So in the same way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur caused this disturbance, this ruckus, to the extent that people were ready to kill him. Now this is the case with all preachers in the world. It happened to Lord Jesus Christ the same. They were ready to kill him. They did kill him. Haridas Thakur. So many different occasions. If you read from my Christian upbringing, the different saints and sages from that tradition, so many were killed because of their faith. They caused a fracas, they caused a disturbance. They saw the anxiety that people were in, that the horrible situation of life, and they said, look, go to the spiritual world. This is the real reality. And for that, the envious people wanted to kill them. So be prepared for that. If you're a devotee of Krishna consciousness, at the moment we're living in a very secure little situation here, but in the future, who knows? To preach Krishna consciousness may become a dangerous thing. But we still do it because we want to cause a disturbance in people's minds to bring them back home, back to Godhead. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj initiated people from all over the world. Europeans, Burmese, English, Americans. And you know that analogy, turning bell metal into gold, that's exactly what he did. He turned these people that were mundane people living this life that was explained in the purport today. Miseries, internal sufferings, separation from family, da 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 da, just misery, and turned them into gold, turned them into Vaishnavas, turned them into lovers of Krishna that are happy, but not just a temporary happiness, but a happiness that will last with them forever. So further on, from the years 1990 to 1929, he was constantly travelling all over India, lecturing to crowds of thousands, debating and destroying various bogus religious sects and performing parikram, walks around different holy places with his disciples to different sacred sites, seeking to improve and preserve them. During these travels, he installed the footprints of Lord Chaitanya in 108 places where the Lord had travelled during his sannyas life. All those spots he had also recorded the dates when Lord Chaitanya had been there. Has anybody seen the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya in all these different places? In Tirupati we went to see one. It was really, really beautiful. You didn't see it, Bhakti, you missed out. And yeah, there's the feet of Lord Chaitanya. I thought I had big feet, but Lord Chaitanya had huge feet, beautiful imprints of his lotus feet. And everybody got to touch lotus feet. So that's at Tirumalam. And Puri also, yeah. Can we see them in Puri? Westerners? Okay. So, in 1930-31, a new kind of spiritual education was exhibited for the benefit of the public and especially the illiterate masses. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada demonstrated the important teachings of Vedic literature by means of huge exhibitions in which pictorial representation by means of dioramas or doll lifelike manners were employed. This is what Gopa Vrindesh and myself were talking about as far as one of the improvements that we have to do at Rath Yatra. We somehow or other, because they're illiterate, they may be very worldly knowledge, but spiritually they have no knowledge that they're not this material body. So we need to have dioramas that people actually come up and see, oh, yeah, I was a baby, yeah, I was a youth, yeah, I was a... Oh, is that what happens? You have to wake people up. So he was one of the ones that employed this method of preaching. And these wonderful exhibits drew at least 100,000 visitors daily during the month at a period of time. So he had that ability to draw people and change their lives. Now this is a very important point. He made a point to present Krishna consciousness in a very professional way. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted everything in a very professional, pukka way. And see, you could see how that legacy was carried on by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Usually the sannyasis of that day only wore a 3-meter cloth, which they ripped 2 meters for a lungi and 1 meter wrapped around top. That's it. That's what they wore. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati completely turned that upside down. He wore really beautiful kurtas and cloth and coats and overcoats and shoes and all that kind of stuff. Because he said, how effective would my preaching be to the sophisticated gentlemen and ladies of India who are the intelligentsia? It's the same as Prabhupada taught. We have to reach the intelligentsia. We have to reach the intelligence sector of the community. People that can easily accept this and then be influential in changing society. So he said, how can I be influential in my preaching when people see me dressed as this sadhu and they think, what has he got to offer me? Look at him. You know, he's got these rags on. So he changed that completely and he wore very, very pukka clothing. And in that way he became a real gentleman preacher. And he thought that people will judge him by the clothes that he wore. And that's true. Absolutely true. So when we go on Harinam and Sankirtan, we have to maintain that we always look very, very pukka, that we look really well presented, either as Vaishnavas in dhoti kurta, or if we're presenting Krishna consciousness to other sectors of the community where we then have to dress in a different way, we still have to maintain very nice dress because people judge you by your external appearance. And more we have to understand that there are circumstances where we even don't wear Vaishnava clothing for the sake of preaching. And it's not that you're no longer a preacher. You are a preacher within, and you can change a person's life just by wearing nice Western dress. In my position in doing things in chaplaincy, doing things as interfaith preaching, dealing with the government, it is more beneficial for me to wear a suit and tie to get my message across than it is for me to come in a dhoti and kurta. No matter how nice it looks, still, for the Western mindset, they say, "What? Why are you dressed like this? You know, how can I relate to you?" But if I come in a shirt and tie and I'm talking about Krishna consciousness to them, about a particular, I'll accept what he looks like me and he's pukka, and they accept it very easily. It was really interesting. One time, this was so funny, there was a Gandhi memorial, Mahatma Gandhi's memorial dinner, right? And I was invited to come as a guest on behalf of the Hare Krishna movement. And they invited people from all the public to come to this Gandhi memorial dinner. And I'm dressed up in silk dhoti, kurta, so on and so forth, you know, tilak and everything. One Western man comes up and he said, "Gee, you really went all out, didn't you?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you got dressed up like Gandhi." I said, "Excuse me, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee." "A who?" He just saw me as wearing Gandhi's clothes, like if I was on some, you know, Halloween, you know, that was my costume, you know. I said, "Oh, my dress, you know." Anyway, this is rather funny. So he made a point of always being very, very pukka. So, you know, and even you see it today in different preachers, our preachers, the parampara continuing on from Srila Prabhupada. You have a look at these men and women that present Krishna consciousness. They're so pukka. I hate to draw this analogy again, but my Shiksha Guru Radhanath Swami, when you see him, he just looks the epitome of puckiness. But it's not even Western clothes, not even Indian clothes that he's wearing. Yes, he's wearing the lungi, but for the rest he's got either a skivvy or a t-shirt on, very nicely pressed, exactly the right colour as the dhoti, exactly the right colour as the top, and he looks so radiant, he looks so effulgent, you know. that in that dress, as a sannyasi, as a preacher, he can meet the President of the United States, and you know, it's all okay, it's wonderful. Indradumna Swami, the same thing, he meets so many people, you see him up on stage when he's dressed, you know, he looks regal. And in that circumstance, it works. Maybe it doesn't work for a grihastha going to a Gandhi memorial dinner, but that's so you are judged by what you wear. So preachers, again, must disturb the unhappy population of this age of Kali. If they don't have anything to do with you because they think that you are strange or an oddball, you won't get the opportunity to present Krishna consciousness. So we have to be really mindful. Sometimes you have people that are a little bit fundamental Krishna consciousness. They say, "No, Prabhu, I have to wear my dhoti and kurta everywhere I go. Everywhere I go." It's not necessary. We have to present the message. That's the most important thing. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, "I want to open temples in everyone's heart." And that's the point. If you're more effective in wearing Western clothes, then wear Western clothes. If you're more effective wearing Eastern clothes, then wear those clothes. Clothes don't matter. It's what you're presenting. That's the most important thing, you know? But we have to be careful that we don't ostracize or alienate people, that they can't understand what we're about just because of the clothes that we wear. So it's very important. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj made that point very, very, very important. In 1936, he was residing in Jagannath Puri when at the age of 62 he left this mortal world and again re-entered the loving pastimes of Sri Radha and Krishna in the sweetness of Rajadhan and the spiritual atmosphere. So Maharaj wasn't on this planet for very long, 62 years. That's still reasonably a young man. It is. Still a young man. I'm coming up to 62, so it's a young man. But he did so much preaching. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is our great, great grandfather. You know? Bhakti Srila Prabhupada is our grandfather. Bhaktisiddhanta is our great grandfather. So just as our spiritual masters may sometimes use a heavy stick on our Krishna consciousness, wake up, Bhakta, do this, do that. Srila Prabhupada is more compassionate, more loving. That's okay, you know. And the great-grandfather, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he's even more compassionate. So we can pray for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, especially on this day of his appearance day, to help us in our presenting Krishna consciousness to the broader community, to help us disturb the minds of those we come in contact with in our work, in our play, in our teaching, in so many different ways. We have to cause a disturbance. We have to cause a ripple. We have to cause them to think a little bit, "I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. I'm suffering. Yes, I'm actually unhappy." Just like this young girl, if there's an opportunity that we can talk to her and teach her about Krishna consciousness, you know, so much the better. There's an opportunity for us to also work in chaplaincy and different things. This is the direction that Krishna consciousness is taking. That we become compassionate people that reach out to people's unhappiness and allow them to become happy, spiritually happy, by understanding their real reality. We've got a course coming up very shortly. I've put a notice up on the board for emergency chaplaincy. Now, this is not just for those people that have done a chaplaincy course with me, but this is for anybody that would like to do the course. It's going to be over 3 weeks, one afternoon per week on a Saturday afternoon, and I'll put the dates up tomorrow of the dates that we'll be doing it. But it's emergency chaplaincy. So say, for example, there's a bushfire, or there's a car accident, or there's floods. People are traumatized by these things. You know, like the purport today specified, there are so many sufferings, so many different traumas in people's lives, trying to make ends meet and so on and so forth. And when somebody, all of a sudden your house is washed away, you know, you see it on the news, this lady is interviewed or a man is interviewed, "Oh, my house was washed away with this flood. Were you insured?" "No, I couldn't afford insurance." They haven't got anything. Everything is gone. All memories, all photos, everything. Gone. Or a fire goes through their house. So what the emergency chaplains do, they come and they assist them at that time. It's not necessarily even that we have to preach to them. It's just to be with them. And devotees are personalities where you just have that quality of compassion where a devotee doesn't even have to say anything. And that's that envielessness of a devotee. They don't have to say anything. They don't have to present Bhagavad Gita shlokas. They don't have to produce. They just have to be with the person, just to console them. And this is the role of an emergency preacher, an emergency chaplain. So I'm asking anybody that's interested in doing that to contact the reception, and please put your name down, and I will notify. And here comes another chaplain. Rasanandini, Rasavilasini is now doing chaplaincy training at the cancer, Peter Max Cancer Center. Again, people are suffering from internal infections and diseases, and she's able to help in that way. So this is the way of devotees, in compassion, reaching out to people, stirring, like there's a saying in Australia, which you may not know, it's called stirring the possum. Anybody heard that before? Stirring the possum. In Australia, you know, when a possum is in the nook of a tree and they're nicely sleeping, if you disturb the possum, they become really agitated. You know, like this. So we want people to become a little bit disturbed. So we disturb the possum. This is the duty of the Krishna conscious devotees. So we should pray to Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, we should pray to Bhakti Vinod Thakur, we should pray to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. It's not that they're gone. They're here with us. They're watching everything that's going on. Krishna consciousness is their baby. Krishna consciousness is what they strive for and plan for, just as Bhakti Vinod planned for Bimala Prasad. He planned that he has a ray of Vishnu to push on. Just as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati prayed for his disciple to take this all over the world. Just as Srila Prabhupada prayed to have thousands and thousands of gurus to spread this Krishna consciousness to every point of the world. This is a family business. This is what we're here for. We're here to disturb the possum of material life. We want to raise the consciousness of people. We already have. Krishna consciousness already has in so many ways. And so we pray, especially on this day, Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day, we pray at his lotus feet, please give me the strength, please give me the insight, please give me the inspiration to actually do more, infect people more, change the minds of the people that are suffering in more and more ways than I haven't personally realized. And then all of a sudden, from Chaita Guru within, some realization comes. It's not your idea, it's the family business. It's all these great souls putting something in your mind. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do book distribution at a shopping mall and do this and present it like that and so many different things? Why don't you present something? Maybe I can hold a Bhagavad Gita class in my work. Is somebody interested in Bhagavad Gita? And, you know, so many different ways. Always thinking, how can I push it on? How can I stop the suffering and unhappiness of the fallen conditioned souls? That's our mission. That's what we're here for. So on this day, first of all, the disappearance day of Purushottam Das Thakur. Purushottam Das Thakur ki!
Jai!
And then the appearance day of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki!
Jai!
And Srila Prabhupada's great mercy for giving us this knowledge of these great Vaishnava souls. Srila Prabhupada ki!
Jai!
Any comments or questions at all for this? Yes, Prabhu.
One example of a retired scholarship, I don't know whether you mentioned, he gave a class in Radhapur for 1 month on first 1.1.1.
That's great. Yes.
First chapter, first chapter, first person.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing personality. When I saw all the books that he was reading, I thought, wow, this is... And he had books from all different aspects. He was so knowledgeable in all different things. He had Ramakrishna Mission. He had this one, that one. So he knew what the counter philosophies were. He knew what all these nonsense different other groups were teaching. He had complete awareness of it. Amazing personality. Any other comments? Yes, Prabhu?
Hope you mentioned that Bhaktivinoda Thakur initiated Bhaktisiddhanta
Maharaj
at the age of 7 or something.
Yeah.
But again, why?
What? He was saying that Bhakti Vinod Thakur gave initiation to Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj at the age of 7, Harinam initiation. Why did he want Gaur Kishore Das Babaji to give Gayatri Mantra and be spiritual master to him? Anybody else answer that? Somebody else? Gopa? Why do you think that Bhaktivinoda Thakur insisted that Bhaktisiddhanta instead of him being the guru? That's it. So they were the early days of Vaishnava lineage, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur resurrected the Chaitanya cult, and there were only a few people that were real sincere followers of Lord Chaitanya and sincere lovers of Krishna. And he had a familial relationship with his father. And so you have to have a spiritual father as well. So thereby it's customary that the father is not necessarily your spiritual Diksha Guru. And so he said, and for all those other reasons, it all fitted into the right category. That's one. Any other comments or questions for this? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.